In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a history buff, or an outdoor enthusiast, you'll find what you're looking for. You can explore the grounds of America's first English settlement in Jamestown, or shop along the quaint streets of historic Williamsburg and Yorktown. You can dig into the forensics of the country's earliest settlers or experience a day in the life of one. Each day and each trip is uniquely yours. So plan your visit to Williamsburg today. This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
This is 99% Invisible. I'm Roman Mars.
That's my phone. Sorry. Let me just dismiss that.
Producer James T. Green.
Sorry. Honestly, it's just rare that I even keep my phone on vibrate or anything other than silent. It's kind of rare that I get calls at all.
Yeah, because millennials are killing phone calls.
I mean, well, kind of, but I can still remember a time rich with phone calls. Like, specifically when I was younger, probably around 15 years old. I remember family parties at my great-grandmother's house. The smells were that of pound cake and baked macaroni and cheese. The sounds were of gossip and complaints and bravado. But there's one noise that was constant, and it came from my Uncle Scooter, or rather, from his phone.
See, family functions in my mother's house back then, everybody left their cell phones on, even before they blessed the food.
See, Scooter was the definition of a cool uncle. I remember him wearing a lot of white, even though our meals were pretty messy. He was a sunglasses indoors kind of guy. Sitting at the head of the table as he leaned back, the sunlight through the screen door would shine on his link bracelet. And his flip phone was always clipped to his belt, because Scooter got a lot of calls.
Well, it may have been rude of me, but I wanted to hear my phone. I wanted it to ring.
Scooter was always getting up from the table to go to the corner of the room and whisper on the phone, or step out on the porch. Sometimes he'd take the call right there in front of everyone. And we all remember the song his phone would play. It's seared into my brain.
My ringtone is This Woman's Work by Maxwell.
Uncle Scooter had a lot of girlfriends, and so his phone, a hollow mono speaker blasting Maxwell's smooth neo-soul sound, rang all the time. It never went beyond the first few seconds, so you just hear the before he flips open his clamshell phone.
The song starts out, you know, he starts to scream, you know? So when this ringtone goes off around people, it grabs their attention, especially by me being a single man. It caught a lot of girls' eyes and their ears, too.
And this is the time when everyone had ringtones, when the song your phone played really said something about you.
I never had a ringtone myself, maybe for the same reason I never got a tattoo. I never wanted to commit to something so personal and so public.
Yeah, ringtones were really meaningful, and they could be different for all of your friends. I remember I'd scroll through like my 15 contacts, figuring out what was the best ringtone to assign for folks in my phone. Like, what song would play when my best friend calls? Or my mom. And my crush.
That's a whole lot of Usher.
I mean, like, who wasn't listening to Usher at that time? But it wasn't just Usher. You could go vintage with a timeless track, or you could grab a new single and change it up with the newest, hottest song. These little 15-second melodies were these disposable, yet highly personal trinkets. And it was all thanks to this guy.
My name is Vesa-Matti Paananen, but everybody calls me Vesku.
Vesku is the father of the custom ringtone, which was conceived at a party in Finland in 1997.
At that time, I was 27 years old, and I was living downtown Helsinki, and Wednesday was really the night to go out, hang around with your friends, and it was a gloomy November evening.
Finland was in the midst of its Nokia-inspired tech boom, and a lot of Vesku's drinking buddies worked in tech.
And during these discussions, everybody was having their phones with them. What is the coolest phone? And showing the new stuff that you can do with that.
You were like sitting around the table showing off.
Hey, showing off, of course. Hey, what's the latest thing? Have you seen this that you can really do that kind of thing? Yeah, we were nerds. To be honest, we were nerds.
But they were nerds that knew how to party.
So we were drunk, yeah. But the party wasn't really the thing. The whole inspiration and lightning came the day after, next morning, when you're in this kind of very, a bit fragile mood.
In other words, Vesku woke up hungover.
And you have to find a way to survive the coming day. Gloomy morning, windy, really windy morning. And I was walking from my home to the office. That's about 2 miles. It was cold and dark and my phone rang. And it was this Nokia 2 and dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee.
Vesku was just barely hanging on. The last thing he needed was this annoying sound going off.
And then I decided, now is enough. We gotta do something with this thing.
If Vesku's phone was going to ring, it was going to make the sounds he wanted on his terms.
I really wanted to hear Van Halen's Jump.
Or at least a Nokia cell phone version of Van Halen's Jump.
It's a power song. It would have been so, so much better to hear the all that stuff. It's a positive song for me. And Eddie Van Halen, he's a legend with his guitar.
So Vesku got to work trying to get Eddie Van Halen into his cell phone. The Nokia phones Vesku and his friends were using had this early text messaging function called smart messaging that let Nokia users send messages to each other.
Vesku and his squad realized that they could compose ringtones in a program Vesku created called Harmonium, and then use that smart messaging platform to transfer bits of song as code to a cell phone.
Let's put it this way, that the guys that I was working with, they were capable of doing all kind of cracking and hacking.
Vesku started fooling around on Harmonium and came up with the stripped-down monophonic version of his favorite pump-up jam. Vesku loaded the ringtone on his phone, and he really wanted someone to give him a call when he was out in public. And his big moment came on the way to a meeting on a packed rush hour train. Someone called his phone, and Jump screamed from his pocket. Everyone in the train was staring at him, and he loved it.
The custom ringtone was born. But not everyone was going to be able to hack their flip phone the way that Vesku and his friends did, so he decided that he wanted to find a way to make custom ringtones easily accessible to the masses.
Now we know that we can do that, and we have to spread the gospel. We have to provide this opportunity to everyone and provide some kind of a service or application for anybody to be able to customize their ringtone.
Vesku wanted everyone to be able to hear exactly the melody they wanted, so they could show off their phones and be the coolest nerd at the nerd party. And so he started pitching telephone companies on the idea of an application that would allow people to create, share, and download custom ringtones. And then one day, this Finnish wireless provider called Radio Linja said yes. They took Vesku's idea and scaled it up.
The whole thing, the phenomenon, started to spread. It's like a meme. You are in a bus or a train commuting or whatever, and you hear a custom ringtone. And your first idea is that's not the Nokia ringtone. Where the guy got it?
Vesku's software allowed anyone with time on their hands to make their own musical ringtone creations. But most people didn't have time on their hands.
I would say that 99.9% of the people just want to have the ringtone in their phone.
Which meant they needed a massive library of everyone's favorite songs in ringtone form. And to build that library, they needed ringtone composers.
Composers like Mike Levine.
One thing that would take a lot of my time during the day was to think, how do I boil down a song with a lot of voices down to just one simple melody line?
Mike worked for a ringtone company called Zinky while he was studying technology at NYU. He found the job listing on Craigslist, and he says that being a ringtone composer was kind of like being a translator. Each tune was a little puzzle.
This is something you have to think of, like, if you're doing the song Hey Ya by Outkast, you'd have to think of just that melody line. And do it in such a way where it would still communicate, you know, what the song was to folks.
By 2004, Zinky was one of the biggest ringtone producers in the world. The company says it was selling 2.5 million ringtones a month. And these were basic monophonic ringtones, simple bleeps and bloops, like this. Getting cell phones around the world to play a super stripped-down version of Final Countdown might not seem that impressive today, but at the time, it required a huge amount of work, especially because each different brand of phone required its own custom sound file.
And so Mike and the composers at Zinky had to program different ringtones for each phone manufacturer.
And so we would have to create the same monophonic ringtone like 20 different times. It was enormously tedious. We had a whole bank of phones that we would use for testing these two. And all these were like bricks, like huge phones.
But phones eventually got smaller and cheaper, and the business model began to change. Phone companies started giving away phones for very little money, with the idea that they would make their profits on the contract and other services like ringtones.
And that created a demand for better, more musically complex ringtones.
Polyphonic ringtones started entering the market, and it was like, hallelujah, we can create four different channels of audio. Amazing. And I was so just overjoyed to be able to create like actual kick drums and snare drums.
Polyphonic ringtones meant that instead of one note at a time, you could get four notes at one time.
And so the classic Nokia ringtone came alive in a blaze of polyphonic glory. With polyphonic ringtones, composers were able to move beyond code, and they didn't have to completely reprogram the song for every phone manufacturer. Now they can actually start using keyboards to map out their creations.
If you're doing a rock and roll track, you have to decide how many of those four tracks you're going to give to the drums, how many you're going to give to, let's say, a guitar or bass line, and how many you're going to give to the voice.
This was the golden age of the ringtone, when composers like Mike Levine were cranking out their greatest works of ringtone art. Mike was actually responsible for one of my favorite ringtones ever. Back in high school, I was a huge Kanye West fan. I grew up outside of Chicago around the time that Kanye and ringtones were both blowing up. Kanye's second album, Late Registration, had recently been released. Aside from the big singles like Gold Digger and Heard Him Say, my absolute favorite song was a small cut towards the end of the album, track number 17. It's a slow-moving track with a dense orchestral build, almost like the falling action of the album. The song is called Celebration. I love the production of this track. I felt like I was on screen starring in a movie of my life whenever I listened to it. It gave me confidence. Kanye's Celebration was like the perfect musical representation of myself, which made it the perfect ringtone.
You know what time it is. It's a celebration, bitches. Sorry, I couldn't not end that.
Yeah, no, I'm highly certain that your version was probably the one I downloaded.
Stop it! No way.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure your work was the soundtrack of my late high school years.
This is amazing, James. Like, that's probably the coolest thing I can imagine. Yeah. Oh my God, I love it. I love it. Oh, fan of my work here.
In a short period of time, ringtones became a booming business. But using all these popular songs meant companies like Zinky needed to get the rights to them.
So a lot of my recollection of my time there was working in a very fast paced, like, we need to be the first to get this out. Let's do it. Let's figure out who has the rights. Let's go get them.
That's Stacey Iberhach. She handled the licensing over at Zingy. There was a content team that identified all the hot songs that were coming out. They gave folks like Stacey a heads up, and then she went into action.
Say, hey, this new song is going to drop by X artist, and we need to make sure that we have the ringtone rights the day the song drops. And so oftentimes our job was feverishly trying within the space of hours to figure out which publishers and labels owned rights to certain songs, how did we get those rights.
All of these forces, the licensing, tech, and the business, came together to usher in the final fully evolved form of the ringtone, the real tone.
Real tones were basically just snippets of the song, cut down to size. Like Uncle Scooter's ringtone, it was just that Maxwell song. It was the closest thing to listening to music on our phones in the mid-2000s. And as cool as it was to finally hear music on your phone in high fidelity, for composers like Mike, it was hard not to see the rise of the real tone as something of a loss.
Once we got the rights to the actual songs and once the technology got savvy enough, we became much more editors at that point than anything else. We missed getting to actually get into the nitty-gritty and create the audio ourselves.
And that bleepy, bloopy ringtone aesthetic was gone forever. Ringtones were just music now. Even the classic Nokia ringtone.
And once you could put any sound on a phone, why limit yourself to music?
Our largest market were like younger, mostly boys, based on a lot of like polling data that we had. And so I created ringtones called Burping Cow, Farting Donkey.
That's some classy stuff.
I used to bring home just myself like $3,000-$4,000 a month just selling this stuff. You know, I joke around that it's the opposite of Edison's formula. This is like 99% inspiration, 1% perspiration, because these take like a matter of minutes to create. You know, I would just find like samples of a donkey and like farting noises. It's about as dumb as it sounds.
With millions of cell phone users buying real tone pop songs and donkey farts, ringtones became a cash cow. And not just for the cell phone companies, also for the music industry, which was struggling. In the early 2000s.
In the early 2000s was the rise of file sharing, both of, you know, legal and illegal kinds. And this helped to, you know, cause a major decrease in music recording industry revenue. And so the ringtone was seen as a way of kind of making up for that.
This is Samant Gopinath. He's a professor of music theory, and he wrote a whole book about the ringtone industry. Gopinath says that real tones became an increasingly valuable piece of intellectual property for music publishing companies.
Who owns a song is the publishing company. And so it's the publishing company that gives you permission to, you know, kind of essentially use the material of the song.
The real tones, which were actual snippets of the songs, allowed the music industry to have more control. So they were able to charge a higher price and get a bigger cut.
The real tone may have helped the music companies, but it ended up being the beginning of the end for the ringtone industry.
The custom ringtone met its demise, according to Samant, for a few reasons. As smartphones improved, people just started using their own MP3s as ringtones.
It became much easier to just copy them and get them on your phone.
Also, scammers got into the ringtone business and started scaring off the customers.
But the biggest reason was that it just became too much. If everyone had their own cell phone with their own little cute ringtone, public spaces got really noisy.
And so everyone just started putting their phones on vibrate.
There is a kind of social policing that's really has also taken place to reduce sort of public phone communication practices, and the ringtones decline is a part of that.
Phones became more functional. Texting got better and faster and more convenient. Our phones became full-on pocket computers and entertainment devices with headphones.
People are using their phones as part of creating kind of private auditory bubbles for themselves.
And this spelled the end for ringtone companies like Zingy. and ringtone makers like Mike.
I'll be honest, by like mid-07, it became an almost daily expectation. Be like, we knew, you know, this axe was going to fall anytime. We just didn't know when it was going to come. And everybody was just thinking, we're all making good money here. Let's just enjoy it while it lasts.
Unfortunately for Mike, the axe fell just as swiftly as he feared.
I believe it was in September or October of 07 it happened. And our new CEO at that time came around and basically fired our whole content group. It was about 35 to 40 people let go at once.
The day the music died.
Yeah, it was not a happy day.
Over a decade later, our phones are touchscreened mini computers that never leave our sides. They are our music players, our televisions, our portal to the world. And in a way, it all kind of started with Vesku and his need to have Van Halen on his flip phone.
We proved that there is such thing as a mobile entertainment. There's a business there, and it will change the old world.
Vesku remembers his little place in history every time his phone rings.
Let me see. It's I'll switch my phone on here.
It's not a polyphonic ringtone. It's just an MP3 file that plays when Vesku gets a call. But it's still something he holds on to as a form of self-expression.
I think it's been there at least 15 years. I'm a kite surfer myself, so for me, surfing USA is also a statement that I'm a surfer.
And Vesku isn't the only one still using custom rings. Mike, the former ringtone maker, is now a student of musicology at the University of North Carolina. And his ringtone screams, student of musicology who still thinks about ringtones.
I have been using Radiohead's Idiotech, actually, for a while, which I think makes a really good ringtone.
And don't forget about my Uncle Scooter. His ringtone, 16 years later, is still that Maxwell song.
In my day, when you got something, you held on to it because it was hard to come by. So when you got something, you learned to take care of it and treasure that. And I guess it carried over into my adulthood, especially with something that you like. I love this ringtone and I held on to it for dear life. And I'll probably have this ringtone until I die.
I may not have a Maxwell ringtone on my deathbed, but after reporting this story, I decided I'm not going to keep my phone on silent anymore. I'm using ringtones again, and I think a lot about which ringtone to use on a given day. My default is one of my favorite Yeah 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 song, one that represented a pivotal moment of my life, and it brings me joy every time a telemarketer calls. If I travel, I'll switch it up to match wherever I'm going, kind of like how someone reads a book about the place that they're visiting. If I'm in the DC area, I may switch up my ringtone to a Goldlink song. The week that NPR's Morning Edition changed their theme song, RIP, I made my ringtone the original theme. I think of ringtones kind of like enamel pins or tote bags or baseball caps. They're a simple way for me to show off my tastes in an increasingly templatized world. So, a modest suggestion here. For the next time you go out in public, take your phone off vibrate. Load up your favorite song, something that says something about you. Turn the volume up and wait for a robot scammer to call.
Thank you.
the horrible things that happened when we hit peak ringtone in the 2000s. After this.
If thinking about salsa in a variety of delicious flavors and heat levels makes your mouth water, you need to check out Green Mountain Gringo. With the medium salsa, you get hearty chunks of tomatoes, tomatillos, peppers, and onions in every scoop. The hot salsa brings flavorful heat to every meal, with each bite containing jalapenos, serrano peppers, and other savory herbs. Plus, they've got a hot sauce with a tangy, spicy flavor that enhances the simplest of meals. We've been going through a really big cheese quesadilla phase in our house. I don't know why. Every kid wants one. So I cracked open the medium salsa to make everyone happy, and I'll save the hot one just for me. Visit greenmountaingringo.com and start shopping. Use the store locator to find Green Mountain Gringo products, get inspiration for recipes, and purchase products using promo code PODCAST24 for 20% off. That's promo code PODCAST24. Whether you're a family vacation traveler, a business tripper, or a long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels features locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. That's what I like. I like to be within walking distance of all the stuff. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. With so many hotel brands, Choice Hotels allows you to prioritize what you need. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. Arkel believes in delightful design for every home. And thanks to their online-only model, they have some really delightful prices, too. Everyone who's listened to this show for years knows how in the bag I am for Arkel furniture. I love it. I have a ton of it in my home. But our sound engineer, Martin Gonzalez, just redid his whole living room with Arkel. He sent me a picture, and it was almost comical how much Arkel furniture he stuffed into his Brooklyn apartment. So I'm going to let him tell you what he thinks.
I'm sitting here enjoying my brand new Arkel living room set. I replaced my junky, free and Craigslisted furniture with a very nice set from the Senni collection. I got a sofa, love seat, and chair, all in matching volcanic gray. Were delivered right to my door. All I did was pop open the boxes and screw some legs on. I am so much more excited to have people over now that I'm not embarrassed at my furniture. I did, in fact, use this offer code that Rowan is about to tell you.
Arkel is offering our listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim, visit arkel.com/99, and the discount will automatically be applied at checkout. That's arkel.com/99 for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. Reading minds is hard, but the good news is you don't have to. User testing helps you remove the guesswork and build products with greater confidence by including direct customer feedback at each stage of the product development process. This result allows you to quickly build experiences that meet changing customer expectations while minimizing risk and costly rework. With user testing, you have a trusted partner in experience research. We empower UX research, product, and design teams to make higher confidence decisions with human insights. Learn more today at usertesting.com/invisible.
So, Joe Rosenberg, word on the street is that you have a ringtone story.
I do. I have a ringtone story. It's my one and only ringtone story. And it's not about my ringtone. I should just say that straight off.
Okay.
And it takes place in this golden era of ringtones. It's circa 2004. I'm a senior in college, and it takes place in, you know how like every college has that kind of student lounge area where there's just like a bunch of sofa chairs and the heat is turned up like 5 degrees warmer than everywhere else because like the nominal excuse is that you're there to study, but really you're there to sleep.
Right.
And there's just all these kind of just sleepy undergrads kind of dozing off in the oversized chairs.
Totally.
Right. And like the golden rule of these places, of course, is like silence. It's like the one place, besides, I guess, the library where it's like silence rules, right?
Absolutely.
And so anyways, I went in there to like study slash sleep, and I found a sofa near the roaring fireplace. And I start to kind of, you know, I sit down, I'm starting to kind of doze off. And but just before I kind of actually fall asleep in earnest, I hear this tinny recording of a voice similar to the voice of Alicia Silverstone in Clueless.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going, "Excuse me, your phone, it's ringing." And I'm like, "What is that?" Right? And I look around and there is a cell phone on the coffee table directly in front of me, completely unattended.
Mm-hmm.
It's ringing, and this is its ringtone, is this voice. And then it continues, and it's like, "Excuse me, I still don't know why you're not picking up the phone, because it's really annoying."
And this is the phone. This is the ringtone of the phone. This isn't someone talking to you, next to you, telling you to pick up the phone.
Yeah, no, precisely. This is the phone itself. This is the real tone recording coming from the little tinny speaker of the phone.
Right.
Projecting itself towards me, urging me, a total stranger, to pick it up. And there's no one attending to the phone. I'm the only person near it, right? And it's really loud. And so everyone in this, you know, commons area is starting to, like, look and turn towards me, right? And now the phone is like, "Excuse me, I think you really need to pick up that phone because it's ringing," right? And everyone's looking at me, the person next to the phone,
right,
and, like, kind of giving me these death stares, like, "Yeah, buddy, the phone is ringing. Why aren't you picking it up?" Right? And I'm, like, I don't know what to do because it's not my phone, and I don't know how to, like, communicate this. And I'm trying to be like, "I'm sorry, it's not my," I'm just kind of like, but meanwhile, like, the phone's ring is, like, getting more and more irritated with me, right? Meaning, like, "I don't understand why you are not picking up the phone because it's really annoying, and it's still ringing," right? And at this point, like people are like coughing, you know, making like kind of, you know, doing like the coughs, and I am just getting like red in the face because I don't know what to do, and I'm like, "I'm sorry, guys, and then, you know, finally, like, it, like, the phone reaches this fever pitch where it's just like, "Why don't you just pick up the phone already? Because it has been ringing off the hook nonstop." And at this point, I'm just wondering, like, how many rings has it been set to? Is this person set it to go to voicemail after, like, you know, 12 rings?
Right.
Right. But so anyways, finally, I'm like, fine. I'll pick up the phone. Mm-hmm. And I pick it up. Right. And I can see that you can, like, reject the call. Mm-hmm. Right. And I pick it up. I reject the call. And I'm like, okay, great. I did it. You know, it's fun. Stop ringing nightmares. And just right after I do that, I hear this voice behind me say, "Excuse me, what are you doing?" And I turn around, I look behind me, and I see this young woman who is just looking at me utterly perplexed. And she's like, "Why are you holding my phone?" Right? And I'm like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I had to reject the call." And she's like, "You did what?" It's like, "Well, it was ringing, so I had to reject." She's like, you picked up my phone and decided to reject my call? Why would you do that? Why would you ever pick up someone else's phone?"
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredible violation of privacy, right? And now, like, everyone's watching us,
mm-hmm,
right? And I don't know what to say because the situation is already so, like, strangely complicated to explain how I got to the rationale by which I would feel justified in picking up her phone, turning it off, which she just doesn't understand at all because she just wasn't there.
Right.
Right. And so I'm just, like, stumbling all over myself. And she just continues to berate me about, like, how, like, incredibly presumptuous this has been.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible violation of privacy. How could I ever do such a thing? And so finally, I just go, like, "You know what? I'm so sorry. I'm just going to leave." Right. Mm-hmm. And I put the phone down and just, like, kind of, like, embarrassingly walk/scurry away. And, like, in a way that, like, if I were Hugh Grant, it would be charming, but I'm not. So it's actually just utterly, like, awkward and humiliating. Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
And I still remember this scene more vividly and remember it more frequently than any other kind of comparable scene of embarrassment,
mm-hmm,
like, in my entire life.
Huh. So why do you think that is?
So I've thought about this a lot, actually. Mm-hmm. And I think it has to do with this concept. Are you familiar with this term? It's a German term called, I'm going to mispronounce it, but Treppenwitz?
No.
So Treppenwitz kind of means stare wit. Sometimes it's called stare jokes, stare words. And it's the idea of you've been humiliated somehow in public, you've lost an argument, and like 6 hours later as you're walking up some set of stairs, like the perfect comeback occurs to you.
I see. Stair wit. So like the wit that you come up with while walking upstairs.
Right.
Like away from the scene. Yeah, I got it. Yeah,
mid-step, and you kind of stop and pause, and you're like, oh, God. Only I had said this. And of course, every time we do this, we always spend like the next 5 minutes like kind of honing this comeback
right.
and like
coming
up
with the perfect word,
saying it out loud, giving ourselves a little performance, and then until we've really, really just have the perfect comeback and we can pat ourselves on the back. And, you know, on some level, when we do this, we can poke fun at it and say that it's kind of petty of us and kind of silly and we're just stroking our fragile egos. But I actually think this idea of Treppenwitz, this idea of like coming up with the comeback later, actually does serve a kind of healthy psychological purpose, which is it allows you to get over the thing, right? Mm-hmm. It allows you to kind of put it behind you and put in its place and walk away kind of with your ego healthily intact.
Right.
And I think one of the reasons I've never forgotten this scene and why every time I think about it, and I think about it way too often, it just continues to irk me in this way that is disproportionate to its actual importance, is because I've never thought of the perfect comeback. It's such a complicated...
I totally know what you mean.
It's such a complicated situation with so many layers that would require so much explanation to actually like get the person up to speed to explain to her the context and the exposition and everything such that she would understand the situation, such that I would be able to then deliver the comeback, that it's almost like uncomebackable. And I just, and so it's actually, I've never been able to kind of purge it. It's haunted me to this day. But I will say there's something else about this incident that didn't occur to me until we started working on this story, mm-hmm. which is that this was something that could have only happened at this moment in history, circa 2004. Mm-hmm. So obviously this is a real tone, right? It's a real tone. It's a recording of a woman's voice. It's not polyphonic. It's not monophonic. And it's much more in the donkey's farting category
exactly.
of things
yeah, yeah.
than it is in the music category of things. But what it is that I'm kind of stuck at this moment where two historical forces, one being like an unstoppable force and the other being an immovable object, are about to mm-hmm. collide. And one of these forces is you definitely need your own custom ringtone. Mm-hmm. And the other force is everyone else's custom ringtone is really annoying and everyone just needs to turn them off, right?
Totally.
And this was happening right around this time, 2003 to 2005,
right?
And I got caught in the middle, in between these two forces colliding, because with this ringtone that is addressing this very issue. It is like the ultimate meta self-reflexive scary movie 5, you know, this trend is over. All we can do is point to the form itself and declare ourselves superior to it.
Totally.
Right? Yeah. You know, and so basically this ringtone is saying, like, aren't ringtones annoying?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And in fact, yes, they are. And or at least in the case of this one. And so this is something that, you know, could only have happened to me in this incredibly narrow window of time.
Right.
When this kind of Hegelian dialectic of ringtones and no ringtones, thesis antithesis collides and created something new in its wake. That's all I got.
So if one of the problems with this story is that you never come up with the perfect comeback, the perfect Treppenwitz to ease your mind, to assuage this sort of lingering mortification, maybe we should figure one out for you. You know, like, I don't think I can do it, but the collective mind power of the people who listen to this show, maybe they could come up with a good comeback for you. So if like you were in this situation and you were being browbeaten by somebody who didn't want you to answer their phone, even though their phone was ringing and unaccompanied in front of you. What should you say back? Okay, let's see what we can do.
That's great.
"99% Invisible" was produced this week by James T. Green, edited by Avery Truffleman and Emmett Fitzgerald. Mix and tech production by Sharif Youssef. Music by Sean Rial. Katie Mingle is our senior producer. Kurt Kohlstedt is the digital director. The rest of the team is Joe Rosenberg, Delaney Hall, Chris Berube, Vivian Lee, Sophia Klatsker, and me, Roman Mars. We are a project of 91.7 KALW in San Francisco and produced on Radio Row in beautiful downtown Oakland, California. 99% Invisible is a member of Radiotopia from PRX, a fiercely independent collective of the most innovative shows in all of podcasting. Find them all at radiotopia.fm. You can find the show and join discussions about the show on Facebook. You can tweet Trappin' Vinces at me at Roman Mars and the show at 99pi.org. We're on Instagram and Reddit too. But you can download a set of original music composed for this episode by Sean Rial and use it as your personal ringtone at 99pi.org.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.